is when the parents feel that the school is not safe, that this idea of the future is possible with all that's going on, when they get to this self-love, self-peace, self-worth phase, they want their kids to go to school. They become now the champions, the advocates.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Highest Aspirations, an education podcast focused on providing educators with inspiration and strategies to help multilingual learners achieve their highest aspirations. I'm your host, Steve Sofronis. On this episode of Highest Aspirations, we return to a topic that is really important to us and to everybody working with all students, and that is family engagement. Some of the questions we'll discuss in this conversation today are, what are the primary challenges multilingual learner families are facing in their communities, and what programs can really help to support them? How did COVID and other recent challenges in the education world impact absenteeism for students, and how can those issues be repaired, largely through family engagement initiatives? How can we support parents and families to address trauma they may have experienced in order to improve their relationships with and outcomes for their children? We discuss these issues and much more with Consuelo Castillo Kickbush. Born and raised in a small border sound barrio of Laredo, Texas, Consuelo Castillo Kickbush conquered the challenges of poverty, discrimination, and literacy. Raised without material wealth, Consuelo learned from her immigrant parents that their wealth was in culture, tradition, values, and faith. The values Consuelo learned as a child were reinforced throughout her career in the United States military. After graduating from Hardin-Simmons University, Consuelo entered the U.S. Army as an officer and served for 2 decades. During that time, she broke barriers and set records when she finally became the highest-ranking Mexican-American woman in the combat support field of the U.S. Army. When selected to assume a command post, Consuelo disrupted her advancement by deciding to retire. She chose instead to honor her mother's dying wish, for her to return to her roots and become a community leader. In 1996, Consuelo Castillo Kickbush founded the human development company Education Achievement Services Incorporated to fulfill her mission of preparing tomorrow's leaders through grassroots leadership development. Consuelo affirms that her greatest achievement stems from motherhood. She loves spending time with her husband, 5 daughters, and 6 grandchildren. As I think you'll notice, our conversation was raw and vulnerable. We discussed our own families as well as those of the students we serve, very similar to what Consuelo and her team does through her Family Leadership Institute. As always, thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations, and we hope you enjoy this conversation with Consuelo Castillo Kickbush. Consuelo Castillo Kickbush, thank you so much for joining us on Highest Aspirations. It's great to see you again.
Saludos, Steve. And as they say in my barrio, buenos dias, manito, because we're all familia.
I love it. I love it. Buenos dias. Of course, we're in different time zones. You just mentioned you're in Las Vegas. I'm up here in Buenas Tardes because I'm up here in New Hampshire, just north of Boston. But it's great to connect with you. I want to start off first by thanking Sandra Medrano Arroyo, my wonderful colleague, for connecting us and making this podcast happen. She's such an inspiration. I know reached out to you about this, and we had a great conversation that I kind of wish I recorded maybe a few weeks ago, because that was wonderful as well. But here we are to talk about the great work that you're doing. So let's get started. So you founded the Family Leadership Institute after seeing all the challenges that families were facing in their communities. What are the primary challenges, in your view, that families are facing, and how do they differ by sort of family experience? So you think about newcomers, second generation, third generation, et cetera. Let's start there.
When I first started, it was about telling my story. And it was about the school assembly approach, you know, getting on stage, talking with children, over 1 million now.
1 that million? Birth, you just sort of like breezed kids. Over that. We'll say that again. 1 million. Amazing. 1 million
children, 48 states. I think I have one more to go. But, you know, going to the schools, being, I always say, in the streets with the community from the Bronx all the way to East L.A., there surged an awareness from the children's perspective. Their challenges, not just within the school system, but they were feeling this tremendous sense of helplessness towards what was going on at home. What does that mean? Well, you know, mom was getting divorced, you know, dad's struggling to find a job, you know, they're immigrants, they're facing discrimination, they're feeling feelings of abandonment from the home country to the new country. And every, you know, they say, I'm a refugee, what am I an immigrant? I just want to go to school. And these were all mostly emotional issues.
Yeah.
So when I looked at the school system, so how are you helping to build bridges of understanding, a place where it's safe to speak about the impact of culture, emotional issues, what we now call the social emotional learning? I found it quite surprising 15 some years ago that it was parent involvement. What did that mean? Well, they were having gatherings, cafecito con los padres, wonderful approaches, great intentions. But here's what the challenge was, Steve. 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Where are you going to find parents at 9 o'clock in the morning? You're going to find them at work. Yes, you could find elementary age children's parents, perhaps, madres. So then we're going to have them in the evening. Well, then there was another challenge, and so on and so forth. So even at these gatherings, it was what I call surface. A lot of information, good information, but they weren't dealing with what I believe the FLI does. The healing part of it, the restoration part of it, the being able to speak about very delicate subjects like gender bias, machismo. You know, these are important subjects to deal with in a very delicate, but not, you know, deviate from what needs to be said. So all our children feel equal, so that all our children feel that they have a voice in that. And so the question then, perhaps, where I love the fact that we have been researched, is superintendents and others will ask, well, what does this have to do with academic success? That's what we're here for. We're here to teach. Children should be learning. Well, if you're not feeling good, and you're worried about the home, there's stuff going on with bullying and all this other external, how are you going to learn at your optimal level? So we've learned that by helping the families, to strengthen the family, to create through this framework a richer, more loving, more caring, empathetic, resilient gatherings of families, that it does present itself in the classroom.
Yeah, and I've seen the results. Those videos on the website that you showed me are just amazing.
Oh,
and you're bringing up some really important pieces, you know, some really sensitive topics, and those, you can even see it in the video. And I haven't attended one of these, but it's really emotional, and it's pretty raw, and it's, I would even use the term cathartic for people, in a way that, you know, really kind of gets at some of the trauma and the issues that they've been facing. And if my numbers are right, you've graduated over 2,000 parents. Is that right?
Oh, well, we've done quite a bit since then. And
so,
yes.
So let me ask you this. However many it is, you know, there is a huge number. And there's a huge amount of parents who haven't done it, obviously, who still sort of would benefit from this opportunity. So I'd love to know, what, once they graduate from this program, from FLI, from the Family Leadership Institute, what are they better equipped to do? And maybe if you have one, if you could share like a success story that particularly sort of stands out to you.
We have so many.
Yeah. And again, you can go to the website, watch the video, and you can see them. I will link to that later.
Hundreds and hundreds of success stories. But the one that really comes up to my memory right now is a woman living in a garage, recently arrived with her family, came to the FLI in Houston. And we take them through the modules, you know, learning about self, you know, how to create a loving environment, how to create a learning corner wherever you are. And in her case, she was in this garage. But also, we focus on the self. What about your dreams? What about your desires? Well, Maria made a vision board, and she said, I want to learn English. I want to have my own business. And I want to buy my own home. And so Maria, you know, actually got in the car, went across Houston, It was on somebody's lawn, beautiful home, and the children thought they were going to get arrested. She took a picture of this home and she said, "This is mine. I'm claiming it." Went to school 7 years, learned English, worked for Supercuts. In less than 10 years, she owned her shop. She drove to that same neighborhood, and there was a for sale sign.
Oh,
She bought the home.
amazing.
And when she shared that, years later, she said, "It's not that you brought me this secret. It was within myself to discover." Think about that, Steve. So what we're helping is for the leader in every parent to emerge. That's why we call it the Family Leadership Institute. But here's another discovery we made.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Principals, superintendents, board members, teachers, social workers, counselors, they would come to the conference and say, I'm here to observe. And guess what?
They
They found out
participated.
they were wounded too. They found out they had kids. They found out that, not that they found it there, but they learned to embrace that they are on a journey as well. So now I believe somebody needs to check my statement. We're
We don't
the
have a fact
only
check on
gather.
this podcast, so
Okay, well,
whatever you
somebody
say
needs
is
to.
true.
We're the only gathering in the nation, as far as I know, that you attend our conference. We're the only gathering where a superintendent, a board member, a teacher, and a parent can sit at the table. And all we ask when you come is that you leave your title at the door.
Yeah. I love it. And that builds community in a way that, is very natural, and everybody has that in common. If you have kids and you're dealing with the challenges, different challenges, but you have that in common. This leads me to my next question, because you said something really beautiful that really resonated with me, and I thought about it a lot when we last talked. You spent some time discussing the fact that while many parents and other family members may not have this extensive formal education, they bring
Yes.
valuable experiences to their families, to their schools, to their communities.
Yes.
One thing that resonated with me was when you said your father had a PhD in life.
Absolutely.
And I can relate to that as a son of an immigrant father who had to drop out of high school to help support his family, was drafted to go to Vietnam at 18 years old, dealt with all that, raised a family, and unfortunately passed away earlier as a result of being, in Vietnam and exposure to Agent Orange. But that
My
wisdom
respects.
is still with me. And that wisdom that he carried, I've sort of tried to pass on to my son. I have two master's degrees. I'm, I guess by the book, I don't have a PhD, but I'm almost there. But I'm still trying to capture and harness and extend the wisdom that my father brought as an immigrant, high school dropout, because that's incredibly, incredibly powerful. So my question is, that wisdom is irreplaceable, but it may not be something that's particularly valued or well understood by schools. You've kind of gotten into that by bringing this community together. I think that helps.
Absolutely.
How do we change that so it can work to a family's advantage?
Well, first, I want to thank your father for his service to our country.
Thank you.
Without getting too emotional, being a veteran myself,
Thank
I
you, by the
served
way.
20 years. And out of my 10 brothers, eight of us are veterans. The PhD in life is where I believe wisdom crosses from the practical to the theoretical. I believe in the education community, the theory is, or the assumption might be, we need to educate parents as if they have to begin from ground zero. What I've learned, including, I'm sure your father, if he was with us, the practical, the realism of coming, having to make something out of nothing, having to be, I say there was no Toys R Us, it was toys I make. There's all of these amazing qualitative, but not so as quantitative, experiences by which your father raised you, my father raised me, that no PhD in a theoretical, schematic, let me read the manual how to build this. In the school that we come from is haz algo. Do something. You have to, or you're going to die. You know, we're not going to go hungry. So my father would take nopales. My mother would add flour. She would add a little milk. And 13 people got to eat or starve. You know, I'm sure your dad picked up stuff that others call trash. You know, but there he saw, as my father saw, the possibilities. So when you a district says, oh, we need to help parents, I hope they change the narrative and say, how can parents help us? Because what we're in is a partnership.
Yep.
We're in community building. And that's why I say we're the only gathering in the nation where a superintendent sits across the table from a parent that just picked the fields the day before, or clean somebody's bathroom or raise somebody's child, and has wisdom beyond about what is happening in the community. The other thing I learned about this perspective, there are the doñas and the dons in every community. These are your power brokers. So if you have a PhD in life, there's the curandero. You know, that's your first line of alternative medicine.
Yeah.
You know, there's a doña down the street that fixes things because she has this experience of having to raise and do without. So there's a whole PhD in there, by the way, Steve.
Oh, yeah. A couple of them.
On this idea of resiliency, and I always say there's three levels that most families, newcomers go through. You're victimized at first. You don't get fair housing. You don't get the best jobs. But then you get to survive. You get the job. You hold on to it. You do what you got to do. And then one day, because you're resilient and you work hard and nothing's given to you, you get to the point of being a role model. Your dad went to Nam and he learned how to survive. He came back and he learned from all that and he became a successful father. Successful. Of course, we all have our demons. I'm not excusing that. But what I'm saying about families, this is my favorite quote, meet them where they're at. Meet them where they're at and bring them along so that all of us in the school district can look at our children as our children.
Yeah, I love what you're saying there. Bring them along. It's a partnership. It's not, you know, asking how we can serve them. That's all, I think, phenomenal. And I appreciate you sort of bringing your own experience with your father and your military experience, as well as mine, into the equation. It makes it an emotional conversation, but one that I think resonates more, at least with me. So I really appreciate that. And that's kind of where I want to go with this next question. I'm going to go out of order a little bit, because when you talk about meeting families and parents where they are, you, I know, and FLI are not afraid to explore the trauma and the emotional issues that many families are struggling with. You mentioned demons. We all have them, particularly if you have dealt with trauma, and who hasn't? And when we talk about immigrant families, there's more of it. So what does sort of uncovering these delicate and often painful experiences do to help families more effectively engage with their schools and communities? And what effect does it have on their kids and their academic experiences?
What we try to do, we're about empowerment and skill building. Therapists do what they do because they're licensed and that's what they need to do, you know, practice their skills. What we do is give everyday skills. Let me give you an example. One of our modules is about journaling. Many of our families have been internally oppressed. They have been living with what they had dealt with in their childhood, never said it to anybody. And then unconsciously, because no one wakes up every day to mess with their kids, but unconsciously, the behavior you learn, the things you saw every day, you now become that parent. You're the yeller. You're the screamer. You compare your kids. You want them to be what you could have been, and so on and so forth. So in journaling, you get to look at yourself and you get to experience the why. And when you learn that you're yelling and you're screaming, I'm going to use my own case. was my mom and her mental illness, her inability to learn how to cope and needing help, and I didn't know how to help her. All these things, you know, was my baggage, my demons that I brought into adulthood. Well, if you're doing just parent involvement and I'm having coffee, I'm not going to come up with any of that, right? That's not the place. But if we're in an institute and we say, this is a safe zone, this is about healing, we're going to show you that journaling is a good way to outlet those emotions, what happens? It's such a beautiful, magical experience. Parents will start to raise their hand and they'll say, Señora Consuelo, I want to get rid of this stuff. I want to read it. I want to read it with the other parents. I want to let it go. Yo ya quiero descansar. And then what happens? We give them strategies. So how do you become this empathetic parent? How do you become this listening parent instead of the screaming parent? And the next day or so when we meet with them, they'll come just like children. Señora Consuelo, what's happened? I can't. I have to tell you right now. I said, what do you want to say? I didn't yell. I didn't scream. And my kids asked me, are you okay, mom? And then I hugged them and they were like, what? What are you doing? You haven't hugged me yet since I was a baby. And then they cry and they say, thank you. Thank you for bringing love back to my home. But thank you for teaching me to love myself. And one of the things I say to moms and dads, you are enough. Es que no hablo el inglés y mi niño no me entiende. You're still enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Está con su niño. I had a beautiful Vietnamese father in Des Moines who never entered the school. Never, never, never. And his child was a prodigy. So he came to the FLI and he said, all I know is I'm a dragon maker. He was one of the best dragon makers in Vietnam. I said, you're enough. He said, how can I be enough? I don't speak English. I said, you're the dragon maker. So he went into the school with a small dragon. The kids, anyway, make a long story short, he is now part of the multicultural celebration at this elementary. He's helping the children to make, you know, the big dragons.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in the school. And you know, like, I try not to get too emotional, but he says, later, he says, Señora, in his Vietnamese, through his translator, he said, thank you, I am enough.
Yeah, amazing. That's beautiful. I mean, I could spend so much time just going through these stories, and like, but they're really impactful. And we're talking about the emotion and the trauma involved. And I think that's what's missing in some, and I don't think it's a bad thing, and I don't think you do either. It's to sit and have coffee and meet parents, of course. But what we're talking about now is a higher level. I want to try to like transition into thinking about how the work that you're doing actually changes schools and deals with some of the issues that we're facing right now. And the first one that comes to my mind, and Sandra and I were talking about this before we talked to you, is I wonder, how do we connect this, or is there a connection with this, and this chronic absenteeism that we're seeing since COVID, and that really is not being remedied in some situations. So how do these family engagement strategies, or the work that you're doing, how does it play into this? Do you think schools sort of understand the specific challenges that lead to students missing school? And if not, and I would say that probably in some cases they don't know, what can they do, or what should they be doing to kind of better understand them, and sort of help them overcome those challenges?
Well,
it's a lot. I just asked you a lot of questions in one. So I think you can handle it.
Two more days of discovery for us. And I apologize. I thought I had turned my phone off, but
that's okay.
What I've learned post-COVID in terms of absenteeism and pre-COVID, right? I think absenteeism has always been a challenge.
Yep.
But I think this is where I think is an important note to keep in mind. The school symbolically was the connector for a community to learn, but also to socialize. When you disrupt that, you disrupt it, it's everything affecting the home environment. And so how do you then connect and the school become again the symbolic place for where kids get a sense of belonging and where parents know that their kids are safe, because COVID certainly created big question marks around whether they would be safe anymore. The increase in shootings and disruptions and violence, all of these things, while they're interconnected, sometimes we go at them very separately. For me, the FLI is about guidance. It's about going beyond, your kids need to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get your kids to go to college? Well, it begins with creating a learning environment at home. How many hours are they reading? How do you read? All of these very simple, but yet very connected frameworks for getting a sense of the future as something possible, something hopeful. When our families who are now working more hours, the cost of living is more and so on and so forth. It's not that they don't care, they don't want to. It's about how can we find the time, whether it's a virtual FLI, like we're doing with Nabe. Thanks. Thank you, Nabe. Thank you. You know, wonderful people that are finding ways to connect with families. And what I've learned is when the parents feel that the school is not safe, that this idea of the future is possible with all that's going on, when they get to the self-love, self-peace, self-worth phase, they want their kids to go to school. They become now the champions, the advocates. Not that they before said, I don't care if you don't go to school, but there's a lot of depression. There's a lot of anxiety in America, at least, that I've seen. So how do we create this feeling of hope? How do we create this resiliency? And to me, it's in the bringing families together to speak about what is in their heart, not just what's in their mind. It's a very different design than many other programs. They're all great in their own way. But for me, the FLI is about coming together, as you saw in the video. No one is in more pain or less. We're just in pain. We want to let the demons go.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look at our kids with a different lens. I want to see myself with a different lens. I want to see the school system through a different lens. And in the end, when we graduate, I'm going to go in that school like my Vietnamese dad.
Yeah.
I am enough. Absenteeism will self-correct itself when you put these very important lessons in front, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And I think it goes back to what you said about the simple yet very powerful strategy, I guess you could call it, of having different people in the same room, a superintendent, a teacher, somebody who, you know, just got back from work, and bringing them together in this way and just establishing this community so that everybody understands the value of those conversations and the value of school in general. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, it's very, very inspiring and very sort of, there's a lot of vulnerability here and a lot of emotion and everything. But I really want to make sure that folks know, and you mentioned this earlier, this framework is backed by research, a lot of research.
Yes.
Give us an example of how the research supports the work that you're doing and how it shows in general that family engagement strategies have a significant impact on the lives of students and their families. Now, there's one like long-term study that people might be interested in hearing about, but you can,
thank you so much.
Whichever one you're most interested in. But I think this is what we're missing a lot of times, the bridging the gap between This practice clearly is working, but to have research that shows even it's a huge win.
You know, early in the early years, that was the number one barrier for me. Are you evidence-based? We are so evidence-based now. it's not even funny. But I want to thank Dr. Jovi Lawrence, certainly NABE, and the Department of Education. We're part of a national professional development grant that is in partnership with Project Assets out of UCLA, certainly a premier institution. We've also had an impact study done by a clinical psychologist of the San Bernardino community by Dr. Abdina Boa-Rios. We've had an internal audit done by Dr. Kevin Baird out of Houston Independent School District. And we're still in ongoing research, which will be launched in March at our national conference in San Antonio as a result of us supporting over 200 families in Nebraska under another National Professional Development Grant out of the Department of Education. We've also had Grandview University do a research project with the Department of Education, and that research involved over 200 families in Iowa. All of the families, we can say, were not just EL, majority were, but also very diverse families, as I mentioned to you, many of our parents who come to the FLI. And I believe we're more than happy to share all those results through our website, which is www.easleadership.com. We certainly hope that our listeners, thank you for your time, that they will also be interested in our conference, which is happening in March. And I'm going to look at my notes because I'm old. March the 6th through the 8th is in San Antonio. And again, you know, come, you don't have to become a practitioner. You can just come and observe and then decide for yourself, is this something my district can do? But the research is there. But the good thing about the March the 6th through the 8th is Dr. Jovi Lawrence, an expert on language assessment, will be unveiling the results of our ongoing FLI with them. So I think we're excited that she's going to be able to come and reveal those results. We're definitely research based.
Yeah, and I've had kind of Dr. Jovi Lawrence and I have chatted, but it was a long time ago now, and we're talking about trying to do a podcast episode together, and it never came to fruition. But I believe doesn't she host the podcast now?
I don't know, but you need to have her.
I do. I know. Okay. Well, put in a good word for me when you're at that conference. We'll connect again. Well, it depends. If you're having a good experience, of course, you wouldn't recommend it if it wasn't, but I'm having fun so far.
She's amazing.
The other thing, so you're talking about an in-person conference, March 6th to 8th, which is great. We'll note the website. But you've gone virtual with the modules. And I'm sure you have lots of plans for the future. So I do want to ask you one more question after this, but I want to ask about this because it's related to what you just talked about. How can people, what are you going to do next? And how can people look at these modules and get involved if they can't come face to face or have you visit?
Well, when I grow up, what do I want to do next? We offer several approaches. For example, many districts, they just want on-site. They want me there. They want me to be the 3 days with them.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I totally understand after talking to you for half an hour.
No, we love all the other things, but we want you there. So we do that. We do an on-site FLI, and again, through our website. There's what they call the hybrid model, like New York. And New York says, we want you to come, let the parents meet you, know that this is what will be happening virtually. Then we do a virtual series. And then I come back to New York or wherever I'm at, and we celebrate, or Nebraska. We have the conference. And then under the grants, depending on NABE, who is our host, and who we provide, I believe has approval for South Carolina, New York, Florida, and Washington State, I believe. Imagine any family in any place in those states has can get the FLI for free.
Awesome.
Isn't that
Beautiful.
amazing?
Yeah, it really is. Congratulations.
Thank you. And at night, it's just amazing to see the family, the wave. My favorite stories are when they come the first time and there's four of them. And then the next night, they'll say, Señora Consuelo. I go, hello, New York. There's 20 of us in here.
Yeah,
I go,
that's good.
20? How do 20 people get in a one bedroom? And they're like, yeah, my primo, my tia. And we're all sitting on the floor and we have you up on the TV. I mean, think, how do you, you can't even quantify that. That's priceless.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's reach,
Yeah.
and it's, you know, what I appreciate about the work that you're doing is I think you're scaling in a very responsible way, it seems like to me. When you mentioned going, I love the idea of going somewhere, introducing the program, introducing yourself, putting a face behind the name, letting people go at these modules, which are high quality, and then coming back and celebrating. Boy, that's the key. That's the nice part right there. Because it can be very, I don't know. I mean, we've all taken online courses. And when it ends, it can be sort of very like unceremonious, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But to have that, I really love that approach. Sounds great.
And listen to this, Steve. I was, we were doing a program with Nebraska, and many of the unaccompanied children ended up in Nebraska. And, you know, they found places to live. Some were homeless and so on. And so somewhere along the way, they got connected to the FLI. And in
the
some
kids,
of these
the students did that. The
yeah. And they listened to the FLI at night. These are children from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, all alone in a very small rural place in Nebraska. Reminded every day that they're not wanted. And they listened to this FLI. And you're absolutely right. When I showed up for the graduation, you know, they said, we saved our money because we want to wear a tie. We wanted to be respectful to you. Queremos darle respeto. And to tell you, we're not fathers. We're 17, we're 16, but I'm enough.
Yeah, they're getting that PhD in life if they don't already have it at that age, for sure. Yeah. Amazing. Well, this has been really an inspirational conversation. I'm sure everybody listening feels the same. We have only, I think, scratched the surface of the work that you're doing. You mentioned the website. We'll link to that. I have two more questions for you. One is about the website and any other resources that you have. Aside from the website, is there any other place that folks can go to learn more about the work you're doing? We'll link to anything that you have.
Well, the best way is info@easleadership.com. I'm very blessed to have two of my children follow in my passion to serve. I serve with them, Consuelito and Delilah, and my husband, who's in the behind the scenes guy, but very important in my life as well. To come and whatever we can do to serve and to help. I always said to my children and how we run this company is service before profit. You know, yeah, we got to pay the bills and so on, but we don't turn anyone away. And in our conference, I make it sure that we make sure there's enough food. Because our families who come have never been in a hotel, they've never been waited on, they want to bring their kids. And it's our responsibility, it's our honor to serve them.
Yeah.
Because my mother cleaned toilets. And no one ever said good morning to her. But she didn't clean them, she made them sparkle. She had a strong work ethic. That's where that PhD in life comes.
Yeah.
So we don't advertise our company like other people do. It's dream makers like you and others who find out about us and say, wow, what an interesting story, right? So thank you.
Of course, it is an interesting story, and I did find out about you from one of my colleagues, and she found out about you through something else. It was word of mouth, and it's a beautiful thing. And what an amazing thing that you're supporting families with a family-run business. And I had the pleasure of meeting one of your daughters in the call we had last time. It's such a great thing. Okay, one more question, and this is a question that I ask everyone. It's a little bit of a selfish question because if you look behind me, there's a whole bunch of books, and many of the books that are on that bookshelf are recommendations from people who have been on the podcast, and there's been 250 of them.
Awesome.
So I'm going to ask you if there's a book or a film or any other resource that's had an important influence on you, either personally or professionally, that you'd recommend to anybody listening to this episode.
Oh, well, I shared with you offline that the children in these 1,000 districts, 1 million plus, actually inspired me to write the book about those school assemblies. What do I say in my story? There's these children that would send me emails and tell me, what was that one story? I forgot about it, but and so I wrote the book as a primer so that the teachers, when they go back, they can help them look deeper, some of the questions that I pose. So Journey to the Future, we have it in English and Spanish, and we hope that the children continue to read it and learn from it. But really, it was them that challenged me to do that. There's a second book that I'm working on, so you got to stay after me, Steve. And it's really what I've learned from the FLI through the lens of the families. And we're, and it's about parent involvement as a starter, but the real work is when you get into the area of skill building. And that's where the PhD of lives come full circle.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, we will be, you can bet we'll be in touch about that, the work that you're doing. And I'm sure
Thank
you'll hear
you.
back from me. I hope this isn't the last time that we do this. And looking
No.
forward to continuing to watch all the great work that you're doing. I would encourage everybody to go to the website. And again, we'll link to it in the show notes and the blog post. And start, I mean, I would start with some of those videos. That's where I did. It's just absolutely amazing the work that you're doing. And I think that anybody listening can hear the passion in your voice. And it's very clear that you are very well suited to do this kind of work. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. Thank you for your
Thank you.
service. Thank you for bringing in such personal and vulnerable stories, and somehow weaving my own experience into this conversation so masterfully. I really enjoyed it. I hope everybody listening did too. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Remember, you're a dream maker.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community, where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.